Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Football Faithful's new Fantasy Premier League podcast. Yes, we are finally dipping our toes into the realms of fantasy football with our new show called Fantasy Faithful. As you can tell, we put loads of thought into the title. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh no, not another fantasy football podcast. But look, don't worry. This is more so for your average FPL manager who plays the game for fun, doesn't take it overly seriously, but wants to get better at it. You want to get your rankings up a little bit higher this season. Look, I know for a fact that you, listener, even if you're not taking it overly seriously, you want to get one over on your mates or your work colleagues. Maybe you're in a money league and you want to be competitive. You finally want to get that big prize. Whatever it is, we want to help you reach your goal, and we're going to have a lot of crack along the way and talk a load of shite. So for our inaugural episode, we've managed to get Abubakar Siddique on as our first guest. If you're an FPL player and you don't know him, then you need to get to know him because he posts excellent insight on his Twitter account at Big Man Bakar. That's Big Man, B-A-K-A-R. Make sure you're following him. He likes to crunch the numbers for you so you don't have to. And he's here today to give us the inside scoop on his FPL strategy and why he's been so successful over the years. This is a man, by the way, who once finished in the top five. So he is definitely someone to pay attention to. It was fantastic having Bakar on to cut the red ribbon, so to speak, and get us started on this new venture. We were only meant to record for about half an hour, but we went way over that. So what I'm doing is splitting this into two separate episodes. And this episode will cover using stats and particularly how to build your squad and talk about formations, all that. And the next one will cover transfers and captaincy, two of the probably most important things in fantasy football. So without further ado, here's Bakar after this.
I like the fact that football is made for entertainment.
One of his runs again, and one of his goals again! There is the Tottenham goal that they needed!
Because it's about instinct, and football should be that.
Look at this run by Schindler. Oh, that's a fantastic goal! Another outstanding strike by Schindler. He's taken on the entire Barnsley defence.
Creativity, instinct, you don't dictate things in football.
Schindler has been prominent in it. It's very prominent indeed. It's a classic goal from David Schindler. It's 2-0 to Newcastle.
This is a gift. This is something. When you receive the ball is your friend.
Superb strike from David Schindler. That's what he can do. He's been threatening to do that all night.
That is absolute class. Take a bow. Wonderful.
Merci beaucoup.
I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Abubakar Siddique. I'm sure I've gotten that wrong, the pronunciation, but anyway, more commonly known in the FPL community as Big Man Bakar. Big Man, how are you doing? It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be on board. I'm doing well, thankfully. I'm taking a bit of a break from FPL and after the season's ended. And I'm looking forward, actually, to watching football again as the Premier League resumes.
I definitely needed a break after the end of last season. I don't think I've ever been as stressed out in a period of time to do with this game as I was then, because it was just a games every day. Oh my God, like it was just so much. But I think you're absolutely right. We all needed that break. And we're here now, new season. Everyone's looking forward to it. It's the shortest break ever between seasons. So I think everyone's just about raring to go. But yep. First of all, yourself now, you're obviously fairly well known in the FPL community, but you are kind of well regarded because you finished fourth, I believe, about 5 years ago in FPL. I mean, that's amazing. I looked at my previous finishes. I think that year I finished, 400,000. So you are in a different planet to most players in the game that season. I mean, that was incredible, really, to finish like so close to the top. Were you kind of feeling like, Jesus, that was amazing? Or did you feel like, oh, if only I had done one or two things differently, I could have won?
It was just surreal. I mean, I never expected it to go that well. But I mean, it sort of hit me that year in like December when I was in the top 100. I thought to myself that I have a chance at winning this in this game. And that was the season before the chips were introduced. So I mean, I gave it my best. I'm not too worried about not winning it. I would have taken if you would have offered me a top 5 finish before the season had begun, I would have, you know, bitten your hand off. So,
I think we all would have taken it.
So I don't mind. Yeah. So I'm very happy with that. But I mean, it was just a one in a million season. I can't see it happening again ever. So I mean, I'll just take that and run.
Absolutely. And I suppose, look, how much luck is involved in something like that? Because sometimes you can do hours and hours of analysis and preparation for a game. And then sometimes a game is decided by a deflection off a beach ball. You know, how much do you put that down to pure luck?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even though I'm a firm believer of the fact that, you know, luck evens out over the course of the season and that FPL is mostly skill and less luck. But I mean, I won't deny the fact that, you know, luck plays part. When it goes against you, the swings could be brutal. So, I mean, you obviously need luck to go your way, particularly when you're finishing that high up in the ranks. And of course, it can't be without, a huge element of luck. And you need certain things to go your way.
Yeah, of course. And I know, you know, in your social media profile, it says numbers are my thing. And I think maybe we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about research and, you know, the kind of analysis you'll do. But, you know, you're well known in FPL circles for your excellent weekly threads. And I saw today that you said that you're going to continue doing them into the new season. How long do you spend collating all of the info for these? Because it's a great resource. I mean, people are very thankful for you for doing all the work for them nearly. You know, like how much work do you put into this?
I'm humbled to receive such appreciation from the people who read my articles. I mean, It takes about, you know, three to four hours for me to, you know, collate the data, make some computations and, you know, come up with some kind of analytical research to put sense into things. But yeah, I live, breathe FPL. So it's something which, you know, makes me happy. So I'm glad that it's something which is useful to people who play FPL.
Excellent. Well, we might as well get stuck into it because why we have you on here today is because we want to kind of help people in our first episode to get to grips with FPL. There's a lot of managers out there. There's 7 million players of this game, judging by last year's numbers. So, you know, there's an awful lot of people out there who would be interested in the game, play it on a weekly basis, but maybe aren't addicted to it or they aren't able to dedicate the time to it, maybe that other people can. And you see a lot of people who lose interest after a while. I mean, I'd be interested to see, you know, the numbers from last season on how many dead accounts there were after the halfway point. So hopefully we can help some of those people get better because this game has become ferociously competitive over the years. And you see a lot of people putting in a lot of work just to get those kind of marginal gains. So before we start, what is the first thing you would advise your average FPL manager to do in order to improve? What is the simplest thing they can do to improve their team?
The simplest thing they can do is to, you know, to switch off once you have a bad week. This is something which, you know, I struggle with because, you know, when you put your expectations in a game and when you're hoping things go your way and they don't, then it's very easy to, you know, give up or be too hard on yourself. But the thing is, you just need to switch off. Just, you know, don't look at your team for the entire week. Just log in like on the last day or on the day before the deadline and then think about the game. I mean, this is, as I mentioned, FPL can be brutal at times. So for someone who's starting off or who's new to the game, I mean, it's very sort of important to understand that, you know, things can be brutal early on, particularly. It's just best to keep it simple. And if things go your way, then, you know, then enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent bit of advice, actually, and one that I should really take myself. So first, I want to bring up, you know, research, as we mentioned there. I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's important to do your research, always do your due diligence on transfers. And on top of that, I suppose, you know, looking ahead at fixtures, what you have up next. And I suppose, how would you feel about maybe looking at particular matchups? Is that something that you would say people should do?
I mean, this is something which depends on the kind of, you know, FPL manager you are. I mean, I know some people who who tend to watch almost every game that is on air on the weekend, and they tend to watch Match of the Day and all the highlights, and you know, they keep an eye on all the fixtures. And then there are some, I mean, for example, there's the guy who finished first in the season when I came fourth. His name is Simon March. He, after the season ended, he said in an interview that he didn't watch a single game of the Premier League that year, and he finished first. So I mean, this is something which different people have different opinions on. Personally, I think that you don't actually have to watch all of the games. I mean, you can just watch any of the games available at your own will ability. It's not a hard and fast rule playing FPL. It's important to keep things, you know, simple. And as long as you keep a clear head and read the right things, you maybe you can take time out for Match of the Day. It's just an hour's show, and you can watch that, you know, give you sort of an idea of where the FPL stratosphere lies. I mean, even that is fine. So, I mean, just 1 hour before the deadline is fine for people who are just starting off, and, you know, they don't want to sort of delve deep into the data and read and you know, do a large amount of research.
That's interesting, because I suppose, like, it's impossible to watch every game. You're never going to be able to do it. There's a lot of things you're going to miss. But how do you feel about the whole debate about using stats versus the eye test then? Because a lot of people will make decisions based on things they see in a match, but you know, other people are, like you said, the person you mentioned there, like, you know, they didn't watch any matches and did it based off their own research. So
yep, absolutely.
Do you believe in the eye test? Do you think that's a thing? You know, it works for some people, I suppose.
Yes, it does. But remember, you know, Steve, you're speaking to someone who's a strong advocate of numbers and stats. Yeah. So, you know where my opinion lies on that one. I mean, I'm someone who basically looks at numbers. I read numbers week in, week out of all Premier League players. And I read stuff like, you know, numbers like stats, shots in the box, big chances, XG and all that. So, I mean, just the eye test for me is not enough. I like, you know, the eye test to be backed up by data, by numbers. So once that happens, then I know that this is the pick I have to go for.
And I suppose in the same vein, keep an eye on the news, I suppose, is one thing that we could tell managers out there, because you want to make sure, you know, you're aware of footballers' availability so that you don't have players basically who are missing through injury or suspension. That happens far too often, where you make a transfer and you don't even realize the player can't play that weekend. So that's something always to keep in mind. Now, next up, squad building. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, Bakar, because a lot of people have different, you know, notions on this, different ideas. Some people will stick to a very particular formation. Some people aren't that rigid. What is your kind of take on that? Do you think it really matters whether people go with a 5-3-2 or a 4-3-3?
I like choosing a formation which is flexible, because I think it's very important to be flexible at the start of the season. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule as to, you know, what formation is the correct formation to begin with. But I mean, I think, for example, five at the back is probably too rigid. So I won't recommend going in with five defenders from the off. But I mean, something like even 4-4-2, 4-3-3, that's fine. Because, you know, with wing backs and with attacking full backs like Robertson, Doherty, Trent, I think that is doable. So I don't have a sort of a hard and fast rule on that one. I'm not too rigid. As long as, you know, you're giving yourself the flexibility in your squad to shift to players in form, I think that's fine.
So in terms of then the actual players, would you be one to, you know, make sure you have as many marquee names as possible? Or is it more important to find value for money?
Yeah, this is a very important question. And I strongly believe that it's important to find a balance. I like having, you know, two premium options in my squad, primarily midfielders, because I think midfielders are explosive. You know, by explosive, I mean that they have the highest upside in terms of points. So someone like Salah or Aubameyang, they're very good picks for Game Week 1 to start off with. And with that, with those two, I mean, if you have someone off the range in the sort of like the 9 million, 10 million range, someone like Werner or Kane, that's a nice, you know, start. I don't like having too many heavy hitters in my squad. I think two heavy hitters and one sort of a 9, 10 million player is fine, because it allows you to have balance and with some bargains in FPL. I mean, there are always bargains in FPL. You can come up with a very strong squad.
You mentioned Timo Werner. And some people have a very strict wait and see rule on, you know, new players into the Premier League. So they won't buy them immediately off the bat. Now, I personally think that there are certain players that you should go for. The year Mo Salah came in, for instance, I knew he had about 15 goals for Roma the previous season. And I just felt this guy is surely going to be getting goals. He's coming into a very good Liverpool team. You know, I thought that was a very obvious one. And it turned out to be. I had him for the whole season. Dimitri Payet was another one because he had the most assists in Europe in the top five, in Europe's top five leagues the previous season when he came to West Ham. So I thought that's a no-brainer. And as it turned out, he was absolutely brilliant that season. So do you have a hard and fast rule on that? Would you be waiting to see, or are you seeing someone like Timo Werner who's gotten about 30 goals last season? You're saying, no, he's automatically for me.
No, I don't have a, you know, a strict, stubborn rule on that one. I like you said, I mean, if someone, the important thing for me is that Timo Werner has the numbers to back it up. I mean, for XG, he was, you know, third for XG throughout Europe. So that tells me that he takes a lot of shots, has a lot of big chances and has done it in the top leagues against the top players. So why not in Chelsea? I mean, if he has the numbers to back his reputation up, then I'm all for it. I mean, another, I love the example about Salah that you quoted. Another player who did really well, like this was Diego Costa. He had the numbers to back it up and he started really strongly as well. Yeah. So, I mean, if the evidence is suggesting that, you know, a player is likely to do well, then I see no harm in starting with him.
What do you look for when you're looking for hidden gems and differentials? Because it can be hard. Like that's where a lot of gains are made, because we know everyone's going to have Salah. Everyone's going to have Kevin De Bruyne. What are you looking for when you're looking for that differential? Because it can be so hard sometimes and you're really taking a bit of a gamble, because if they don't come off, you know, you've kind of wasted a transfer nearly and that chance to make ground on those ahead of you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is a very interesting question that you raise. And the difference between the top players and the, you know, the above average players is basically these kind of picks, the differentials which they pick. Because, you know, everyone else is going to have the Salahs and the Aubameyangs. So the difference is going to be made by these, you know, cheap bargains which you spot. I mean, back in the day when I finished fourth that season, I picked Harry Kane at 4.5. And I remember he had less than 1% ownership. And he was a 4.5 million forward. And he started scoring for fun. So, I mean, these are the kind of things which, you know, need to spot. And it's hard to spot, you know, it's not easy because it's going against the grain is always hard. But for example, this season, there's the option of picking someone like Che Adams initially over Danny Ings. And Danny Ings is going to have a good big chunk of ownership. And Adams is more of a differential. But when you actually, you know, delve deep into the data, like, you know, when last season when Adams and Ings both started together post-restart, Ings was actually outscored by Adams and Adams outstarted him. So these are the kind of things, you know, you need to notice when you're making the squad. And Adams is like 2.5 million cheaper. So he could probably be worth the shout over Ings, because that 2.5 million extra could go a long way in building your squad.
It definitely can. You really need to make that money count, especially this year, because I feel like the prices are particularly high among those really premium players. But in terms of how you pick those players, you know, is very interesting. And we'll come on to that when we talk about transfers. But first, I want to talk about your bench, because maybe this is slightly overlooked part of it. Sometimes people like to have a strong bench, and some people will have a bench full of players who will never see a minute in the game this season. What do you think? Do you like to have a strong overall squad, or do you pack your first 11 with the best players possible?
Early on to begin with, I don't think the bench plays a huge part, because, you know, the rotation is at its minimum. But, you know, when the season progresses, and maybe when I wild card or in the second half of the season when I'm supposed to play my chips, maybe then I'll have a stronger bench, because I think early on it's better to invest in the 11, because that allows you the flexibility to, you know, change players early on as well. I initially, when I'm building the game week one squad, the most important thing for me when I look at the bench is that, you know, it should be cheap. A and B, ideally, I'd want players who play. As long as that is being fulfilled, I don't really give too much attention to how good the bench is, as long as they're playing.
Yeah, they could be all 4.0 as far as I'm concerned. As long as I've got a strong first team, then you're not going too far wrong. And then as well, I suppose another thing maybe certainly where I went wrong in the early few years where I was playing, and I'm going back, you know, like 8 or 9 years or something, you know, sometimes you're not really always focused on the players who are going to get the most points. You know, sometimes you have to realize you're not a real manager. You're not sending a team out to play a real match. So don't be picking holding midfielders like, you know, N'Golo Kante or Nemanja Matic, you know, because they're rarely going to score or assist, and they might be cheap, but they'll add very little value. And at the same time, avoid, you know, the hard working forwards who rarely get on the score sheet. What you want is the players who are most likely to get the points. So that's goals, assists, clean sheets, and in the case of goalkeepers, saves.
This is, you know, this is a very important point that you raise, because for new players who start the game or who don't pay too much attention to it. I mean, for example, you know, Kante and players like even Firmino, I mean, he comes with a reputation. He doesn't score too many goals, though. These are very sort of, you know, they're popular players. They're famous players, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will score the most amount of FPL points. When you're looking at FPL points, you need to look at goals. You know, you need to look at assists. I mean, that is all that counts. I mean, that is the output that you need. That is why, you know, picks like Salah, Aubameyang, Werner, these are popular because, you know, they have the pedigree to, you know, score, you know, 20 plus goals a season. That is what that, you know, what counts. What's important to note here is that, you know, I know that Kante is cheap, and often when, you know, you look at ownerships early on, Kante is often very high. But it's very important to realize that it's important to, you know, have like a smaller team player who's playing striker rather than someone who's popular like Kante, because it's all about FPL points. If someone is playing from as a striker, even though he's playing for a poor team, it's important because you know, he has a higher chance of, you know, getting goals and assists than someone like Kante or Henderson.
Yeah, that's it. So I mean, that maybe that's a point that, you know, people should take note of as well, is that just because a player is playing for a poor team, and maybe like Wilfred Zaha, Crystal Palace, he's classically been a good example in this conversation, where Crystal Palace not always been the best team, not the most exciting, don't score a lot of goals, but there are times when Wilfred Zaha has been on form and he's the guy you kind of want, especially as a cheapish kind of option. Alexander Mitrovic for Fulham might be that this season as well. You know, Fulham, I don't know, I mean, they're my team. I don't know how good they're going to do this year, but Mitrovic might be a good option.
Even Pukki last year, I mean, he started really well. Yeah. You know, this is the point I'm trying to make. The big fish in a small pond, it often works. You know, when you're the ace man in a smaller team, it often translates to, you know, a lot of points because of the higher goal involvement percentage.
Because as well, I think a lot of people be looking at Chelsea. A lot of people have been talking about, you know, Werner and Hakim Ziyech. But of course, the problem there is it's similar to the problem we kind of had with Man United towards the end of last season, is that there's so many options, you don't know where the points are going to come from. And that's not to say you shouldn't have players from them, but it's just something to keep in mind that it could be stressful trying to pick just one out when they have four incredible attackers. And, you know, there's rotation risks there as well. Whereas, like you said, with Pukki last year, didn't really get dropped until after the restart. Mitrovic is, I think, rarely going to be dropped. You can get a lot of value out of those players sometimes. Last little bit on squad building. Leading up to the first week, do you like to leave a little bit in the bank for transfers for the second week, or do you just spend it all leading up to the first game week?
This is another thing which is, you know, important this year. I mean, I see a lot of squads, a lot of drafts with people leaving, you know, money in the bank to buy a United or a City asset in game week two. And I mean, this is a strategy which can work. But personally, I have a very hard time leaving money in the bank. I don't think I've ever done it in FPL, at least not in the past 5-6 years. I am someone who likes, you know, spending all the budget. So this is something
I know that problem very well, Bakar. Too well, and not even in fantasy football terms, just all my money just goes out the window. So
you know, Steve, I mean, even if I, you know, even if I know for a fact that even if I say to you right now that okay, I'll leave 1 million or, you know, 1.5 million in the bank in FPL right now, I know, you know, an hour before the FPL deadline, I'm going to change that team and I'm going to spend the money on my team, and so it won't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll be there and you'll be thinking, if I just spend that money, I can get Sadio Mane in as well as Mo Salah, and then I'll win all the points. So I hope you enjoyed listening to the first episode of Fantasy Faithful as much as I enjoyed recording it. The next one on transfers and captaincy will be coming very soon, so make sure you are subscribed to our feed for that. We'll be doing weekly episodes when the season gets up and running, which is September 12th, so very soon. And we'll be giving you tips and, like I said, generally a lot of shy talk. You can listen to the 90s Football Hall of Fame as well, if that's your thing. It's a podcast I also host in this very same feed, and that also comes out every Thursday. And make sure to check out thefootballfaithful.com for more content on FPL and the Premier League. Thank you for listening, and see you again real soon.